U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The Robert Mueller special counsel probe reaccelerates as Donald Trump's former lawyer Michael Cohen pleads guilty to lying to Congress about Donald Trump's interest in developing a hotel in Moscow in 2016. Does this change the narrative about Trump-Russia collusion during the election campaign? Plus, Jeff Flake, the Republican senator from Arizona, scuttles more judicial nominations this year because he isn't getting a vote on his bill. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot here at the Wall Street Journal with my colleagues Dan Henninger. Hey, Dan.
I'm with you, Paul.
And Bill McGurn.
Hey, hi,
Bill.
Paul.
So let's talk about the Cohen plea deal. The second time Michael Cohen has copped a plea. With the first time it was with the Southern District of New York. This time it is with Robert Mueller, which is of more moment. By most accounts, because he implicates Donald Trump in conversations that Cohen says he had with Mr. Trump and with and kept Mr. Trump informed about conversations that he had with some Russians about developing a hotel in Moscow, working, sending emails with people in the Trump organization, and that Mueller says, and now Cohen admits, that he lied to Congress about the timing and extent of those communications with Trump in order to serve Trump's, as he called it, political narrative, Bill. Does this change anything in your mind?
I don't think it does yet. I think it could be very embarrassing for the president, some of the details. But, you know, I was just reading Donald Trump's junior's transcript, and he admitted that the talks about
transcript with whom?
The Senate Intelligence Committee,
oh, okay.
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he admitted that the talks about an investment in Russia had gone on to 2016. Look, let's remember that, I mean, a special counsel is supposed to be appointed to investigate a crime. That did not happen here. But it was supposed to investigate attempts by Russia to affect the outcome of our campaign. And we're still no closer. 2 years later, we're still no closer to that.
But the implication is, and this is a lot of heavy breathing out there, Jeffrey Toobin now says, for CNN, The New Yorker says that Donald Trump may not serve out his term. Now, I know that that's not news.
Well, that's what we've always had from the start, a lot of heavy breathing, right? And then there's still no evidence, even with this, of what the actual accusation was, which – to be a crime would have to be conspiracy to change the election, not having a business deal in Russia. So, well, it could be embarrassing. But I think that's one of the problems, to have a special counsel and we go on about all these things that are heavy, but they're not a crime.
Well, Trump says in his response that it was perfectly legal to do this. He says Michael Cohen is a liar. He's exaggerating this in order to protect himself. On the other hand, Trump did dismiss in his public comments before. He said, well, I have no business dealings with Russia. Well, I mean, if Cohen is telling the truth and some of these conversations that Mueller has in his criminal information, Trump didn't tell the whole truth, Dan, about his degree of interest in business in Moscow.
Yeah, I suppose that's true, but it still raises Bill's question of where is the criminal act in the middle of all this?
There isn't one. That's right.
So, you know, I get the Washington Post email feed every morning highlighting their stories of the day. And this morning they had five stories on Cohen's plea. Five different stories.
That's all.
All right? That's all.
Only?
Yeah. And, you know, we live in just kind of a different universe these days, Paul. Michael Cohen is facing years in federal prison. He's under tremendous pressure from a prosecutor. He's trying to do a plea deal to keep himself out of prison. Trump is right about that. This is the way prosecutors operate. Possibly Michael Cohen is telling the truth. Possibly he's onto something. But on a scale of 1 to 100, it's about a 25. And the American Press Corps, which has been trying to push the collusion narrative for 2 years now, has it up there at about a scale of 200. So I pity the poor member of the John Q. Public who's trying to put some this story into perspective.
I guess one question is, what else does Michael Cohen know, right? Does he know anything else about this interest in business? There's a story in BuzzFeed that says that some people in the Trump organization had thought about giving Vladimir Putin a suite in this an apartment in some building, and that would attract other Russian oligarchs to invest in it. Again, you know, I mean, this is all – it's bad judgment on the part of Trump. He knew he was running for president. He was running for the throes of running for president. He has said – Mueller doesn't say why the transaction – interest in the transaction stopped in June of 2016. Trump has said, I cut it off because I was interested in running for president.
And bear in mind that during that whole period, Trump did keep saying extraordinarily nice and complimentary things about Vladimir Putin after the Russians had invaded Crimea. And it was one of the most anomalous things in an extremely anomalous campaign. But it was the one thing that Trump kept saying that no one could quite make sense of. It did raise these suspicions. So it's not surprising that those statements, like other Trump statements, are coming back to haunt him today.
Well, is it therefore you think it was might have been this business interest, potential business interest, Bill? If Trump figured, you know what, I'm probably not going to win the election, as I believe he thought right up until the end. I even think on election day he didn't think it was going to win. But let's say that he figured, oh, well, I might lose. So I got to have my business interests. So I'm negotiating this with Putin, not with Putin, but with the Russians, is no big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I think he negotiated with people all the time and looked at it. Look, again, talking about the lack of news, the testimony Donald Trump Jr. gave was, question is, it's been reported that in late 2015 or 2016, when now President Trump was running for office, the Trump Organization was pursuing a plan to develop a massive Trump Tower in Moscow. Is that accurate? Yes. So it's not like there's new. I think what the special counsel is trying to do, and you look at it from his filings, I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding is that normally in these filings you just keep it to the bare bones what you're charging and why. He's trying to establish a narrative that's embarrassing but probably not criminal. And I think it's a terrible idea. I think it's one reason that it's a terrible idea to have the special counsel. I think Donald Trump has said outrageous things, not helped himself. But I think it's scandalous to have a president marred by a special counsel that was appointed on very flimsy pretexts. And the third point I'd make is that
even if he finds something,
well, he hasn't found something. That's my point. If there was it's supposed to the statute is you're supposed to start with the crime and investigate a crime. It did not start with the crime. It was a counterintelligence investigation into Russian interference in the U.S. election and whether Donald Trump worked with them to do that. I just think it's how – I mean, if that's how we're going to operate, having been in a White House when there were investigations into people, it's very crippling. It's very for people that are under Scooter Libby and Karl Rove, it's very, very difficult for them when this is going on. I think it's outside the process. And I would just add my last point that if Donald Trump had been really smart and wanted to get money out of the Russians, he should have just set up a foundation like Mrs. Clinton and done all these very bad things and got money from lots of people hoping to buy some influence in a legal way.
Well, I guess I would pull on another strand here of what Robert Mueller is investigating, according to the latest news reports, and that is the role that Roger Stone may have played. He's, as you know, one of the great Beltway bandits of all time, hardly somebody who you would associate with the straight and narrow. Roger Stone, did he have a relationship with WikiLeaks and Mr. Julian Assange to help somehow get the documents published that the Russians had hacked from the Democratic National Committee and elsewhere? We don't know. But he's clearly pushing on that on that, putting pressure on Stone. And I would not be surprised if Stone and Jerome Corsi were indicted, Corsi being a journalist who was kind of flitted about in that circle.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just to me intriguing, Paul, that that Robert Mueller at this point pushing past Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's fixer, kind of a New York lawyer, bottom feeder, really.
Yep.
And so now we're talking about Roger Stone and Jerome Corsi. Jerry Corsi wasn't even involved in the Trump campaign. He's a conspiracy theorist. The Wall Street Journal has a video up today with one of our reporters interviewing Jerome Corsi. And in the course of it, to try to put some background, he's got a video of Roger Stone in his beret and red shirt being interviewed by Alex Jones of InfoWars about this issue. These are really kind of the heavy ethers, Paul, of the campaign. And if the special prosecutor is at this point trying to investigate people who are sort of rotating out there in the universe occupied by Alex Jones and Jerome Corsi and Roger Stone, man, it really does suggest he's not close to finding evidence of really hardcore collusion involving either the candidate himself or the people closest to him. These are peripheral figures.
Well, it's interesting point because you got Paul Manafort, former business partner of Roger Stone. You got Roger Stone, and we know his history. Jerome Corsi, journalist, conspiracy theorist, and so on. And Michael Cohen, bottom feeder, New York fixer. This is the swamp, okay? These guys are not people you want to hire to be involved in your campaign at all right? And I think Trump was drawn to them in some ways, in part because Trump has been on the fringes of politics so long, and nobody in the mainstream of the Republican Party really wanted to deal with him. So he was kind of drawn to these people. And we tried to warn them of, you know, these guys are not savory characters.
Well, Manafort. I mean, he hired Manafort because Paul Manafort had an apartment in Trump Tower over there on Fifth Avenue. And he bumped him and said, hey, you worked on a presidential campaign, didn't you? How about coming to work for me? And the rest is history.
I thought he sacked Roger Stone before the campaign.
Roger Stone said at one point that he had sacked Trump.
Oh.
That he was upset, and this was in August of, I think, or September of 2015, because of the things he had said about Megyn Kelly, the former Fox News host. In fact, I think it was that he and Corey Lewandowski, the campaign chairman, weren't getting along.
Clashing.
They were clashing, and Roger Stone wanted more influence. But again, the way Roger Stone always has, he keeps buzzing around in the periphery of the campaign. And with Trump, you know, it's if you got his cell phone number, it's, hey, man, how you doing? What's going on? He's going, yeah, hey, Roger, how are you? And then he'll listen. You know, Trump is somebody who just takes information from all sources, some of them savory, some of them not. And with a campaign, it's all it's a kind of a crazy quilt of all these figures, not a traditional politician. And I think this is now causing him trouble.
Yeah, I think it is. But again, to all that, these are embarrassing people, right? And being generous, they're embarrassing. There's a lot of embarrassing moments. But I think the real outrage is having a special counsel that's been at this for 2 years, and this is what we're given. And he even has these troubles with these plea agreements and so forth. And, you know, I think that's just a terrible outrage. If you want to investigate the president, the way to do it is through the Congress, which they're going to do now.
All right. We are talking about the special counsel probe, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Dan Henninger and Bill McGurn talking about the Robert Mueller special counsel probe. And Bill, you say It's an outrage to have one. I know we don't like it either. The whole special counsel idea and the and Antonin Scalia's famous phrase, "This wolf comes as a wolf,"
right.
about the former independent counsel statute. But we have it. Okay, we have it. And right now, there's an effort underway in the Senate of the United States with Jeffrey Flake, the Republican senator from Arizona, who has now blocked all Judiciary Committee nominees from getting a vote and going to the floor for the rest of this year because, Dan, he is not getting a vote on his bill with Chris Coons of Delaware, the Democrat, that he says would protect Robert Mueller from being fired by Donald Trump. And being fired, the way it would work is that he said it would have to be a senior officer in the Justice Department who did it. And then Robert Mueller could go to the Article III courts to appeal his dismissal. And Flake has succeeded. They've shut down the Judiciary Committee. There will be no more clearances of nominees that haven't already gone to the floor out of this committee.
Yeah, it's quite an extraordinary thing that Jeff Flake is doing. Jeff Flake being a Republican senator from Arizona. A lot of us have known Jeff Flake for a long time. Had a strong career, quite frankly, fiscal conservative in every respect. But once he and Donald Trump got sideways with each other, he has sort of dedicated himself since to thwarting Donald Trump. But along the way here, he is stopping some pretty significant judicial nominations. The failure to move them out of the Judiciary Committee this week included six circuit court nominees, including a woman named Bridget Bade, who is with being nominated to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. That would be Jeff Flake's own circuit out there in Arizona. She is an Arizonan. If Mr. Flake has any thoughts, and apparently he does, of challenging Donald Trump in 2020, perhaps in a primary in New Hampshire, it is just inconceivable to me, Paul, how pursuing this, frankly, unconstitutional idea, it has almost a snowball's chance in hell of going anywhere, is in any way going to do anything other than damage Senator Flake.
It's important to explain that point about why it's dubious constitutional nature, this bill. And that is, for one point, introducing Article III courts to right. supervise the executive branch's decision, the president's decision to dismiss or hire an inferior officer is blatantly in violation of the Appointments Clause.
Yeah, the one good thing that might come out of this is that people go back and read Justice Scalia's dissent in Morrison that you referred to earlier, and I think Dan is really basing his argument on, because he made clear that our freedom is really based on separated powers, not limited powers, but separated powers. And you're mentioned the president has to be able to fire an inferior officer there. So once you start mixing, that's why it's of doubtful constitutionality. Doesn't mean senators won't introduce it. You remember a famous meeting, I'll leave the senator unnamed, when I brought this point up and he said, yeah, but the Constitution was written a long time ago and Scalia's dead. And
that is a direct quote. I was
quite shocked. So having a bad constitutional argument, unfortunately, doesn't stop senators and everything. I mean, the good news is with Jeff Flake's grandstanding, he's delaying people, but it probably won't really affect them because there's now an even bigger Senate majority. If it had gone the other way or we had a 50, it might have really destroyed some of these people. But it's more just a Jeff Flake grandstanding moment that will pass in January when we reconvene.
Well, and the point about the president's executive power is all about political accountability. Right. You want to hold the president accountable, Dan, for the people he hires and fires. If he fires Robert Mueller, then he is politically accountable. You don't want him being able to say, well, okay, the judge said it might be okay, it might not be okay. You want to have a clear line of authority. And if the Democrats in Congress want to impeach Donald Trump, they can do that. Impeachment is a political process. And I would argue that right now Robert Mueller doesn't need this legislation because he's wholly protected for the following reason. If Donald Trump fires him, the Democrats in the House will have Robert Mueller as their first witness on the first day of the next Congress.
He'll be mentioned in the first articles of impeachment, right?
And just like James Comey. I mean, there's something to, I mean, the idea that we have a political system, ultimately, the founders created a system that wanted to give politics enough room to maneuver and do these sorts of things rather than be constrained by legislation and rules like this. And I think we're right. I mean, the flake thing is really not going anywhere. It's kind of a person. It's the one person who did do this where it did go somewhere was his colleague John McCain, who voted against the Obama health care reforms and basically scuttled it.
The Trump Republican health care reforms.
The Trump Republican health care reforms. And I've always believed, Paul, that was in part just out of a pure animosity towards Trump for the things that Trump had said about McCain. Trump had said about McCain. He has said nasty things about Jeff Flake. And I really do believe, as I wrote this week, that Trump does run the risk of paying a price for some of these brutal fights that he gets into with people, including Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller, who he has torched repeatedly in his Twitter feeds lately.
Yeah. So let's – one other point I want to discuss related to all this, and it gets into the House and so on, and that is Donald Trump's response this week, which was to say that in a, I think it was a tweet or maybe it was in
an interview.
Post, you're right. It was an interview in the Post where he said, if the Democrats decide to go down this route and start impeachment, these investigations, I have all these documents about what happened in the 2016 campaign. And I will declassify them and they will come out and they will hugely embarrass Democrats. Now, this is the way Donald Trump works, right? It's you hit me, I hit
personal.
You back. It's personal. But the truth is, you've been arguing, Bill, for months. We've been arguing for months that Trump should get release these documents not out of any way reason to protect himself, but to tell the public
exactly.
The truth about what happened in the election.
Exactly. Look, I'm all for declassifying. I'm for declassifying now. I think it would still be useful. The Republicans are trying to hold some final hearings. They could write a report. The joint investigation by Judiciary and Oversight. They're trying to get James Comey to testify behind closed doors so he can't just say, well, that's classified. I can't answer it. There's no substitute for declassification at this point to let people know what's going on.
But it's a mistake, in my view, for Trump to put this in the context of his personal peak.
Right.
What he ought to do is release them because the public has a right to know what happened.
Absolutely. I mean, I hope he releases them anyway. But I think that the public right to know would have been a better argument for pushing.
And I do think just as a political proposition, if he does this in the middle of investigations next year as retribution against the Democrats, it creates chaos. It creates kind of static and energy out in the political world. And I think Democrats benefit from that. It animates them. It drives more turnout, just as it did in the midterms. It drives more donations into the Democratic Party's coffers. It's just like a level of noise and chaos that the president seems to enjoy it, but I don't think it's likely to help him.
All right. On that note, we will leave it at that. We will be back next week. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to Dan and Bill. We'll be back next week with more editions of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.